On Circular Stories, we're talking about conscious capitalism, and we'll learn how the four principles of conscious capitalism impact the way that companies do business. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining us today on this edition of Circular Stories. We are joined by Leslie Emmerman, who is the co-founder of Conscious Capitalism Houston. She is also the founder of Dynamic Interactions, a company which helps other companies achieve good organizational health. Well, welcome, Leslie. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Roz.
I'm just so glad that you could join us today. Tell me a little bit, just a little bit about Dynamic Interactions and helping companies achieve good organizational health.
All right, I'm glad to do that. Dynamic Interactions was founded in 2008, basically because I came out of the corporate culture that most of us are familiar with, and they're typically not healthy organizations. And so the company was founded with the idea that a healthy organization is one that really enables employees to learn and to benefit and to feel valued. And so what we do as a company is we go into our clients' organizations and help them change their cultures to one that we would consider conscious, where employees are valued, stakeholders are valued. And believe it or not, the bottom line actually grows, productivity grows, and certainly becomes a place that people enjoy working and things happen.
Well, very good. We're going to go back to that notion of the bottom line actually growing when organizations become more conscious, because I think that is a thing that people don't think of intuitively.
Right. But
before we go there, talk a little bit about conscious capitalism. What is it as an organization and as a philosophy?
Okay, I'm gonna take that kind of the opposite way that you ask, if it's okay. I like talking about the philosophy first.
Perfect.
The philosophy behind conscious capitalism is that capitalism can actually be a force for both economic and social good. In fact, when capitalism was first a concept a couple of hundred years ago, it was founded on the fact that each company had a purpose. Capitalism had a purpose. It served good for humanity. And somewhere along the line, we lost that. And the philosophy became, let's feed the stockholders. Let's feed the CEO. Let's make money. But really and truly, it's a lot more than that. And in fact, it's interesting because if you think about it, our bodies need red blood cells in order to operate, right? But
exactly.
We don't live to create red blood cells.
Exactly.
We live for other things. And so it's the same in the philosophy of conscious capitalism. We need money. We need profit to grow, but we don't create for that profit. We don't live for that profit. We live for the serving, and the profit will come. And so the philosophy is that well-run, value-centered businesses really can contribute to humans in more tangible ways than any other organizations in society.
Wow. Now, as an organization, how long has conscious capitalism been around? And tell me a little bit about the Houston chapter.
You know, it's been around several years. It started as a grassroots movement. I'm not sure if you're familiar or if you've seen the book Conscious Capitalism.
Yes, actually I have.
It is a fantastic book. I highly recommend it. In fact, before we're finished, I put together a small reading list if the audience is interested in hearing some recommendations. But I highly recommend that that book be read. It's written by John Mackey of Whole Foods and Raj Sisodia, who is a professor at Babson College. And so they wrote the book, and the movement began as a grassroots movement based really on that book. And based on the fact that what they were doing, both in their studies at the college and what John Mackey was doing with Whole Foods, was he was building a business that was based on ethics and values and the values that he held. And so the chapters have sprung from that, and the Houston chapter specifically, we started, it will be 2 years at the beginning of 2017 that we've been working on creating this chapter. We've just become a full-fledged chapter, so it's a lot of work to actually make this happen. But in the beginning, what happened is when I left the corporate world and I was working with my organizational health with my clients, I started doing some research and found this movement. And as I found this movement, I looked to see if there was any chapter or any supporting organization in Houston, and there was not. So I contacted the organization in general and just asked what we could do to start something here. And fortunately, within a couple of weeks, Catherine Harris, who's my co-founder of the Houston chapter, also contacted them and put us together. And so we actually started probably around March of 2015 in building this chapter and pulling together the people that we needed and the resources that we needed to support something like this in the Houston area.
Wow. Well, I've had an opportunity to attend one of your events, and it's pretty well attended. I don't know what I thought or what I came expecting in terms of, hey, how many people in the Houston area are really paying attention to this? But I was pleasantly surprised, I have to say. Now, I understand that there are four pillars that underpin the philosophy or the movement of conscious capitalism. Can you talk a little bit about each pillar and, you know, what's all involved with that?
I can absolutely do so. There are four pillars. The first one, of course, you've heard me talk a little bit about, and that is higher purpose. And so when we talk about the pillar of higher purpose, what we're talking about is really, as humans, we all need meaning and purpose in our lives. That separates us from the other animals, if you will. It activates us and motivates us. It gets us up in the morning and sustains us. And so the higher purpose, when you take that and you apply that to a business typically needs a higher purpose. In fact, Roz, if I could ask you a question.
Yes, you certainly may.
This will help. When you think about it, if you were to, you're a professor.
Yes, that is the case.
When you became a professor, what drove you to that? Why did you become a professor?
You know, that's, and it's so funny that you asked that, because I went and found, you know, those old memory books. I don't know if you had one in high school, you know, where people write down, you know, I'll be doing this in 10 years and 5 years or whatever. I looked through the book and I saw that I will be, a professor, and I'll be writing and publishing papers and doing research, and, you know, and there was another area that I thought that I was going to go into, but it pretty much never changed. And I guess it's because, I don't know, I like, you know, the life of the mind, I guess you could say. I love the research, but I guess I'm a little bit different in that I also like the practical side of business as well. So I'm one of those people that likes to marry the theoretical with the practical, so much so that I guess I call myself a pracademic, right?
Oh, I'm not, I love that.
I don't know if I could take credit for that term, but, you know, I love to see how theory kind of gets turned into real life work or real life meaning.
And I hear the passion in your voice. So I would bet that you love to share it.
Okay, so yes, I do. I have a good friend that told me a long time ago that she said, you really like to share knowledge. You really like to raise people's consciousness. Oh, there's that word. So I guess, you know, it's just always been there, right?
Yeah.
It's just always been there.
So when you looked back at your papers, you didn't find in your book, you didn't find that in 10 years, I'm going to be a professor because I'm going to write papers, publish, and make a lot of money.
No.
And become rich and live in a mansion.
No.
No, it was because I really am passionate about learning these things, applying these things, and helping others grow from them, right?
Right.
So that would be your purpose.
Right.
And when you think about an attorney or a doctor or, you know, think about Tom's Shoes, for example, when they began to make shoes, what was their purpose? Their purpose was to put shoes on children who had no shoes. And so when you talk about the pillars of conscious capitalism, that first pillar being the higher purpose,
right,
that's exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
Going back to that originating purpose. What gets you up in the morning?
Right, right. And, you know, I guess when you don't have that higher purpose, you might kind of feel adrift, right?
You do. You're lost. There's no meaning in life.
Right.
And so you really, really need that. And the interesting thing is that you will build a following for your writings and for what you're doing because of your purpose. People will bond with that purpose, and they'll understand that purpose. And it's the same with our businesses.
Right.
People will identify with the purpose of a business, and they will become loyal to that business.
Right.
And so you don't have the purpose to create the loyalty. You have the purpose because it is your ethos. It's what you stand for. It's who you are. And people who relate to that will drift to that.
Right.
And they will buy from you, and they will support you.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit more about the second pillar, which is stakeholder orientation. Explain that.
Yes, stakeholder orientation, what happens so many times, and I will not use names of companies, but there's a very large company that everyone is familiar with that for a while lost their way in the stakeholder orientation and began to, if you will, create an atmosphere where their suppliers had to drop prices so low that they were unable to stay in business. And so when we talk about stakeholder orientation, what we talk about is the fact that we are conscious and we're aware in our business that every stakeholder plays a role in the success of our business. And so that means we've got to allow a fair profit for our suppliers.
Right.
And at the same time, we have to take into account that our stakeholders are not just our suppliers. They're not just our investors, our stockholders, but they're the environment. They're our community.
Right.
So who do we service? Who is it in our community that we service? If I'm building a great product, but I have horrible waste that's going into the water supply in my community, then I am no longer a stakeholder-oriented company, because I'm harming one of my stakeholders. And so I will consciously do what I need to do to ensure that my whole business ecosystem creates and optimizes value for all of the stakeholders involved in my company and in my business.
Right. Well, traditionally, when people think about capitalism, they're thinking about, you know, their focus, as you kind of alluded to earlier, only on the shareholders, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, having read the book, The Shareholder Value Myth, mm-hmm. One of the things that comes up is the fact that, you know, it's so funny that shareholders can be the same stakeholders that are impacted negatively,
yes,
by the actions of a company. So, you know, it's just like, with our 401ks, you know, we have, you know, stocks, so to speak, in many of these companies. And even though it can make me money,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't want to make it at the expense of, you know, living in a very polluted area or,
yes,
you know, and that's the thing. I think we've been solely focused on shareholders.
Exactly.
And a lot of times people don't think that, you know, as a shareholder, you live in these communities as well. You
mm-hmm.
have to drink this water, and you're impacted by, you know, negative effects just like anyone else. So
mm-hmm.
that is a very, very important thing to look at.
Exactly. We're all in this together.
Right.
And we've got to create a system that is a win-win-win proposition.
Right.
So everybody benefits. And it doesn't mean that everybody reaps huge profits or, you know, huge things. A little bit goes a long way.
A long way.
Yes.
A long way. Now, talk about conscious leadership.
Okay, conscious leadership, and probably one of my favorite subjects, conscious leadership and conscious culture. But conscious leadership is exactly what it sounds like. In fact, I'm sure you've heard of the term servant leadership.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you'll find that conscious leaders tend to be more servant leaders. They focus on we rather than the me.
Right.
And so what a conscious leader does is they really inspire and they really foster, if you will, transformation. They bring out the best in those around them. Their role is not to go out and use up all they can, but rather their role is to serve the purpose of the organization. So going back to that original higher purpose, if I'm a conscious leader, then I realize that my role is to ensure that that purpose is upheld. And it's obvious, both internally and externally. And I'm creating value based on the fact that I'm upholding that purpose.
Right. You know, when we talk about conscious leadership, an example comes to mind. I cannot think of the young man's name. I think he's either in Portland or Seattle. He's the head of the company that decided to raise the minimum wage for every employee, whether they started out in the mailroom or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think to $70,000, which he, you know, that's what they determined was a living wage. And, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, this is crazy.
Right.
It's crazy. You know, he'll be out of business. It made a lot of people actually angry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fast forward, I think a year later, and I think they have so much business that they've just grown tremendously.
Yes. And that is the what is the word I'm looking for? That's the power
mm-hmm.
of that, right? When you think about things, and I'm going to use an example. I have a dog,
and
I won't spend a lot of time on her because I could talk about her for years because she's precious. but I have a dog. She's a mini doxy, and if you know anything about dash hounds, they love to run, and they love to be chased.
Right.
And when you chase them, they run from you because it's a game, right?
Right.
And anything that you chase will run from you. So when you chase profit, when you chase greed, right, when these things drive you, you end up not getting them in the long term.
Right.
Right? But when you relax and you do the right thing, they come to you. Does
right.
that make sense? Am I making sense?
Yeah, you're making perfect sense. And, you know, and this is not to say that, you know, companies have to pay all employees, you know, minimum $70,000 mm-hmm. Salary.
Right.
But I think it just shows that where his heart was. I think if employees maybe see that,
yes.
I think they're motivated to really do their best. You know, that's what that particular young man did. And like I said, it's really been going well for that particular company.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and one of the other things that I saw was that one of the, I guess, fallouts from that was that some of the employees actually left the company because they felt that, you know, that it shouldn't be that way.
Right.
That so it's not that it's always easy, but it's really interesting that he had a heart to do
yes.
that.
Well, and Roz, that's such a great point because it's not always easy, and people will leave, and the people that leave are the people who do not align with the ethics and the purpose of the company. And those are the people that you don't want to be a part of it anyway, if that makes sense. And that's why we have the Houston chapter of Conscious Capitalism. It's difficult, and so we need to support each other. We need to come together and talk about these issues and support each other through these transitions because, even though it's an old concept, 200 years old, it's a new concept because we haven't lived it in so many decades.
Right. Okay, and so the final pillar is conscious culture, and you said that you really liked talking about this particular pillar.
Yes, conscious culture, I think, is probably the most important piece. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're all important. I'm sure you've heard of Peter Drucker. We call him the famed management guru. But he talks about the fact that culture eats strategy for lunch.
Lunch.
Exactly. And so, you know, you can have all the strategy in the world, but if you have a culture that does not embody values or principles or, you know, the practices that are really going to drive the actions that connect the stakeholders to each other, then you have nothing. You've got to have that culture. And so a conscious culture, when you build that conscious culture, and this is going to sound kind of funny. It's hard to talk about in today's business world. But a conscious culture is really going to foster and grow love and care. And it's going to build trust between the company's teams, the members of the company, the stakeholders. It's really a force that brings all these things together. And really brings a true conscious business to life. And you know, let's think about it, and I'm sure that the listeners would agree, when's the last time they enjoyed going into the office and not feeling valued and not feeling that they've served a purpose for that day, right?
Right.
It doesn't happen. We all want to come home at the end of the day and look in the mirror and know that what we've done has benefited somebody or something.
Right.
And so having that culture, being able to build that culture that each individual person that's involved can go home and look in the mirror and know that they've contributed that day is of the utmost importance in building a successful business culture.
Yeah. So now we've talked about this and we've really outlined these four pillars well. Can you give me some examples of companies that are practicing these principles?
I can, and I wish I could give you more in Houston, but I do have a few in Houston. We're working on that piece. There is a company, and again, I would encourage the listeners to look up some of these things. There's a company called Barry Weymiller, BARRY-WEHMILLER. They are a capital equipment and engineering consulting firm. They have more than 8,000 team members worldwide, and they're based in St. Louis, Missouri. They are truly practicing conscious capitalism, and each day that they go into the office, they think more and more of how they can practice it even better. On my reading list is actually a book written by Bob Chapman, who is their president and CEO, but certainly a great company to look at. We're all familiar with Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
Whole Foods would be a conscious company. I'm sure you're familiar with the Container Store.
Oh, yeah.
The Container Store would be a great example. In fact, to give you an example of the Container Store, my husband and I shop there. We very much enjoy their policies there. It's a little more expensive, but if anything goes wrong with anything we purchase, we are assured that there's a replacement, that the people will take care of it. And so in going there, we were talking with some of the employees. They have employees that have actually worked retail in their stores for 15, 16, 17, 20 years and refused to leave.
And that's almost unheard of.
It's absolutely
in retail.
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm. At least these days, right?
Exactly. And it is very difficult to get a job at the Container Store. Why? Because each and every one of their employees feel valued. They don't want to leave. The loyalty is there. They really relate to the ethics of that company. And even though they went public not that long ago, they still are maintaining this culture, which is fantastic. You've got... I just lost it. Trader Joe's would be considered one of those companies. Doug Rausch, who is our co-CEO of Conscious Capitalism, Inc., was the former president of Trader Joe's. So he would be a great example of that company. In Houston, there's a company called 117 Media, and they are actually a B Corp, which is probably another subject.
Oh, yes. We will be dealing in depth with B Corps in future episodes.
So the 117 Media is a B Corp. They're focused on education. They're here in Houston. And then another terrific example in Houston is Savage Brands. And that is owned by Bethany Andel. They're there in Montrose and very much practice conscious capitalism. And their purpose is to help their clients realize and achieve and live their purpose. And so the exciting work they do. There's another company called Improving Enterprises. They're an IT company. They do several different IT-type things. They have six locations in the U.S. and Canada. I tell you that because I proudly state that three of them are in Texas. One in College Station, one in Dallas, and one in Houston. In fact, our next event is sponsored by them and will be in their Houston office. But these are the companies that we know about that are practicing conscious capitalism. We do know, Roz, that there are more companies in Houston who are practicing these pillars, who do have those going on, but they're unconsciously practicing conscious capitalism. And so we're looking for those companies. And you know, certainly if any of your listeners know of them or are them, we would encourage them to please get in touch with us. And we would like to invite them to become involved with the movement and the chapter in any way they can.
Well, now, you know, Leslie, I know that there are some people that are thinking, oh, my goodness, this is such pie in the sky thinking. You know, this isn't practical in today's business world. So what has been some of the reaction and feedback that you've received, especially here in Houston? I mean, do you have people thinking that, oh, you know, this is too idealistic, you know, it's unrealistic.
Fortunately, we've been protected from that. I know there are people who think that. I know they are out there. Fortunately, they have not come to our gatherings. The people who are coming to our gatherings are people who are interested in learning more, who want to create this type of environment. And it's heartwarming because our biggest fear, I think, in starting the Houston chapter, being an oil and gas-based
The Petro Metro.
Exactly. We were very fearful of the fact that, you know, it would be shunned, that people would not relate, that they would think it were pie in the sky. And I will tell you that I work personally with an extremely large company. And again, I'm not going to name names, but this is a company, if I said the name of them, everyone would know this company.
Right.
Most divisions of the company are not favored, if you will, in the general public opinion. I do work with one division of about 700 people who are practicing this and who come to the meetings and who know this is not pie in the sky. And their division is completely turned around and completely changed, and they're highly successful based on practicing this. So we've been very fortunate that the folks that we've been exposed to here in Houston do want to know more, and they do want to be a part of it, and they do want to see some changes happening within this city.
You know, I guess I would ask, and you may not know the answer to this, but what do you think, you know, what do you think drives people to finally say, you know, we could be doing better. There's got to be more to this. Because I remember in my own life, you know, as a college professor, you know, teaching in a traditional school of business, I remember it was probably about 2008, you know, it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, there's something slightly off here. There's something not quite right. Is there, you know, are we doing things the right way? Is there a way we could do things better? And of course, I have to say that not everybody shared that sentiment, right?
Right.
So, you know, I just wonder, what is it, you know, do they, like I, have an epiphany or... or what happens?
You know, I think for us, what we have found is there are people who come out of the corporate world, start their businesses, and want it to be different.
Okay.
And so we have a lot of entrepreneurs that are really participating in our chapter.
Mm.
And at the same time, we also have division leaders, the company I was just mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
We have division leaders who see that changes can happen, and they know that they can't necessarily affect the change at the top level,
mm-hmm.
but they can affect the change for their direct reports.
I think
they're tired of being not appreciated, if that makes sense. It's so simple, but yet.
Well, it makes perfect sense. 'Cause one of the things that, you know, I've been seeing or I've been thinking about is that, you know, millennials who will one day be running these companies,
yes.
they already buy into this idea.
Yes.
Of business kind of being able to be a force for good rather than just being completely profit driven and everything else like people and planet being secondary, if they have any concern about them. Do you agree? And do you feel that companies are realizing this change in perspective, especially looking at young people?
You know, that is a million-dollar question, Roz. That is a great question. You know, I have to say that millennials are one of my favorite subjects. I'm too old to be a millennial, but by gosh, if I could turn back time.
Sometimes I think, you know, people kind of give them a bad rep.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, they are, of course, they're idealistic, but they're energetic, and I think, you know, just like, you know, when we were coming along, you know, you learn and grow, and mm-hmm. I just think that they have some wonderful energy.
They do, and what has happened, I guess I've very much have studied millennials and where they're coming from, and of course I'm not perfect with it. I've got so much more to learn, and we can't classify a group of people all the same no matter what. But what I've learned from my studies and from my working with millennials is the fact that they have watched their parents, which would be people my age, grow up, be loyal to companies, work hard, look to really gain that money, that cash, if you will, and always putting off, you know, we'll vacation later. We'll have our life later. Right now we'll deal with whatever we have to deal with to make the money to have a life later. And then what happens is we retire and we die, and we never have that. And so millennials are saying, this didn't benefit my parents. And we're the first generation coming out of college that are not having a better life than our parents had. We're actually up against more adversity than they were. And so what benefit is this for us? And they're looking at what is the purpose? What is our purpose of being here? What was the purpose of our parents? Why did they do what they did? And they're changing that, and I respect that. And I think what we're seeing right now in corporate America is there's a bit of a tug of war going on between your industrial aged people, your baby boomer aged people, and your millennials coming in. And there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, between the different generations. But if we could get people to relax and just really understand that the millennials are looking for appreciation, they're looking for purpose, they're looking to be able to fulfill purpose, and they will be loyal.
Right.
But they can't be loyal to companies that have been run the way they've been run for the past 4 or 5 decades. Things have to change for that loyalty to show up. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. You talked about the fact that you may not be able to affect change at the very, very top,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's on some level. You may be able to. So how would an everyday employee promote some of these pillars, or, you know, how do you get your place of business to start being more conscious?
Yes. Well, the first thing to do is to be conscious yourself. That is the number one thing that you have to do. And so being conscious really means, what do you stand for? What is your personal purpose in life? And how can you live that daily?
And you know what? And just to interrupt you, because something just occurred to me, because I think people may feel that they have to check that at the door when they come in.
Yes.
That that's not, a consideration.
It's not part of business. Not why I'm here.
Right.
I'm here to make widgets. Right. I'm not here to live my purpose. Well, you know what? No, that's not true. You are here to live your purpose. And what is your purpose? Is your purpose to make the best widget possible? Is your purpose to help other people feel valued? What is your personal purpose and how can you live it? And how can you influence others to live theirs?
Because I think that, maybe that's part of the reason why people run out of the door, Okay,
yes.
You get out off at 4 o'clock, by 3:58. It's on your mark, get set.
Exactly. Bell rings, we're out of here.
Well, that's it. I just wonder if, people feel like, there's my work life, right?
Yes.
Like you said, and I don't really get a chance to express my values or, and of course some people would say, well, that's not what, it's there for. You're there to work and, they pay you a salary, so that's all you can expect.
Yeah, but you know what? If it were just that, they could get a robot to do it, right?
I don't think they're not trying, though.
That's true, but you could get a robot to do it. So it's that human factor that you bring to that workplace. And so many times we're afraid to bring ours.
Right.
We're afraid that it will cause an issue, a problem. Somebody will be angry with us. We'll get fired, whatever it may be.
That's a big one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But the thing is that we're humans and we have to live our purpose. It's innate in us, and we're going to find a way to do it one way or the other. Or, and I'm not going to dwell on this, we'll live angry. And we don't want to do that.
And, I don't know, I think that manifests itself. I think it manifests itself in everyday living. And I know, you may not want to go into that too much, but, I think we all maybe sense that something is amiss. Something
yes.
is not, something is not exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about, what's upcoming for Conscious Capitalism?
Well, I tell you what, we are just excited about everything we're doing. We, at this point in time, are doing what we call a general or introductory meeting every quarter. In fact, that's what's coming up on October 25th, and where we do a general introduction to one of the concepts of Conscious Capitalism, and we invite the folks from Houston to come and hear a little bit more about us and hopefully network together and that sort of thing. And then once every quarter as well, we're working on putting together an educational program that will be a little longer. The educational program will be like, how do I apply conscious leadership to my company? What are some of the rules and concepts? What do I need to do? Give me a step that I can, the practical side of what I can do. And so we're working on putting those together as well and would welcome any suggestions or help. But our very next event is going to be on Tuesday, October 25th. It's a breakfast event from 7:30 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be at Improving Enterprises at 4710 Bel Air Boulevard in Suite 305. And, if this is out in time, we hope to see people there. We're having a conversation about conscious leadership. What I would say is watch the consciouscapitalism.org website.
Mm-hmm.
There is a link called Events.
Mm-hmm.
And if you click on Events, you'll find the Houston chapter, and our events are always listed. And then we also have a Facebook page. So if you go out to Facebook and just type in Conscious Capitalism Houston, you'll find us there as well. And we usually have updates and pictures and different things from our various events.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that you know, for some people, I think people might think, oh, this is too good to be true. I think for some people, this will be very, very, I'll even go as far as to say radical, because it's so different than what they're used to.
Yes. Kind of like veganism.
Yeah.
Very radical, but you know what? It's not, it sounds radical because it's not what we're, it's not how we've lived.
Yeah, and I think that it, you know, and the fact that this is very radical to some people listening, that says something, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, engaging your stakeholders, you know, having conscious leadership, you know, creating a culture where people feel valued, you know, the fact that that's radical, that, I don't know, that may say something about
our culture and society,
about
does
our
it not?
Society.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that
but,
is,
you know,
yeah.
We encourage, come out, figure it out, talk to us. You know, if it's something that you're interested in, let us support you in your efforts, support others and theirs. Right now, Roz, it's free. Our meetings are no charge.
Mm-hmm.
We're not charging any membership fees. That will change. And
mm-hmm.
most likely, when we get to 2017, we'll have all of our paperwork in place as a nonprofit. And at that point in time, we will actually be looking for and acquiring sponsorships and, you know, selling memberships, and meetings will cost money. But for right now, take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Network with these people that are like-minded.
And I think it's important for people to just be involved in the conversation.
Yes.
And I don't know if they, you know, I don't know if there are any other outlets for that conversation, you know, and at least in a formal way.
Right.
In a formal way.
In this city, there's not really. However, once a year, there is a national conference that Conscious Capitalism sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
It's typically in April. Again, that consciouscapitalism.org website will have information on it. It was just in Chicago this past year in April. It's going to be in Philadelphia coming up in 2017. And typically there are several hundred people representing many, many companies of all sizes that come to this and, again, support each other. We, you know, our purpose in that 3 days of conference is, what can we do to affect change in this world? What can we do to take capitalism back to being a force for good?
Right. Now, you said earlier, you talked a lot about entrepreneurs and people who are starting their own companies being kind of really in a good position to be involved in these conversations.
Yes. They are in the best position because they have that control.
Right.
You know, they could build it from the ground up as a conscious company. But that doesn't negate people who are in business. That doesn't take away the
right.
opportunity for our companies out there that have 3,000 or 5,000 or 20,000 employees. It can happen across the board. And again, it's being conscious. Do I want to do this? Does my company want to do this? Do we realize the value? And if there are any questions in that value, I recommend that there are some books to read, Firms of Endearment.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty catchy.
Yeah, that would be a really great book to read. And
mm-hmm.
it's Firms as in F-I-R-M-S, and it's written by Raj Sisodia. The last name is S-I-S-O-D-I-A. And it actually takes the different companies that are practicing conscious capitalism, and it gives you practical and scientific information. So they've looked at the S&P 500. They've looked at returns over the last several decades to see where these firms of endearment are as far as profitability versus our standard S&P and our standard stock market companies. And they're finding that 10-to-1, these firms of endearment are actually making more profitability and more impact than our normal companies are when we think of the stock
right.
market.
Very much so. Very
yeah.
much so. There's been a number of studies that talked about that and talked about how just that investment and just better practices has really, really paid off. You know, we started the conversation talking about your work in helping companies achieve good organizational health.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to see if I could get a rundown of, you know, what that process looks like. So when you go in and, you know, you have these four pillars, I'm thinking, in the back of your mind.
Yes.
You know, what does that look like? What is that process like?
That it's going to vary for each company, but the process that I use going into a company is I look at where they are today and where they want to be. I have a plethora, if you will, of questions. There's 50-plus questions that I sit down with top-level management and go over and talk about what is your communication like, what is the openness like here in this company, what happens when mistakes happen. What are the repercussions? And so we talk about culture. We talk about leadership. We talk about how is it that you deal with your stakeholders. And so we determine a plan from those questions as to what we need to attack first, if you will.
Mm.
And then we work on those areas and just sort of, it sounds very simple as check the box, but it's not that simple. I mean, putting a program together to change your culture could take years in implementation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's not simple. It's actually a very long process. I do partner with other companies at times. I have, I don't know if you've heard of EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System. I have a partner that I partner with that can go in and actually look at the big rocks and little rocks, if you will, in a company. And I work more on the culture side. And so we work together to put in place a management structure that is supportive of that conscious growth, if you will.
Right.
And I hope that answered the question, because it's an amorphous kind of thing based on the fact that each company is a little different.
Right, right.
But the bottom line is really understanding where the company is today, where they want to be, and then, of course, the questions really, really help in understanding what is that culture like? What is it that we encourage and that we believe in? What is our ethos in our company, and how do we need to change that?
So now here's the question where you get to state your, or I guess try to predict the future. So where do you think this is going? I know you wouldn't be in this if you didn't feel that there was hope. What do you expect to happen in the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? Will we see that this notion of conscious capitalism, will it be just... this is just the way things are done, as opposed to being something that's, as we kind of mentioned before, seen maybe as a little radical, you right. know. What do you think?
Well, it's funny that you should ask that question. We, as a board, our chapter meets every month, and our last meeting was specifically about 3 years, 5 years, and 10 years from now, and where will we be? And what we believe is that in 3 to 5 years, we can have a city, the city of Houston, every company can have knowledge of conscious capitalism. They can have some level of education and understanding what that is. Now, whether they take action or not is a different story at that point, but at least they'll have knowledge. Today, we have a lot of companies that are unconscious when it comes to the concept. They don't understand it. They've never talked about it. They don't know what it is. And so our educational process, we feel in 3 to 5 years will be completed, and there will be some understanding. We do think that in 10 years, we'll be able to look at the horizon, if you will, the Houston business horizon, and see many companies, probably greater than 50%, practicing some level of conscious capitalism. But we do believe that it's going to take several decades to undo what's been done.
Right.
And to change. But that's exciting.
It's very exciting.
That's where our work is. It's exciting. It's to be a part of that change is really, that is the purpose that our founding members have. That's why we get up in the morning. We all have jobs. We all do something other than conscious capitalism. But what drives us is the thought and the process that over the next several decades, we can be a part of the change. And that's what we want to do.
You know, it would be interesting to look at this, you know, 30, 40 years down the road and see, you know, the fact that this is just the way business is done.
Yes. Yeah. I would so love that. And I would so love, you know, it's very difficult. I'm talking to a professor. I would so love a formal case study over the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, you know, we're always working on stuff like that. And, you know, I can tell you that one of the conversations that I'll be having coming up really soon is with the dean of our College of Business. And we know that, you know, when you're talking about, as we were talking about earlier, this next generation of millennial leaders,
yes,
that, you know, it starts with, you know, what we teach. It mm-hmm. starts with, you know,
and
it's
you're so right.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's, you know, especially in an academic setting, you have the ability to really, really influence things.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't leave myself out of that contribution to the next 20, 30 years.
And that is part of what we are targeting. We've got a chapter in Arizona that very much targets the colleges, the high schools, getting this information in to learners, to people who are young, who are studying business, because we spend a lot of time in school learning about how to make the dollar and learning about, you know, various things when it comes to business, but not learning about this piece. And so we feel it's very important to get this as part of the curriculum.
Mm.
And so that people can really, they come up learning this, and that's where you're going to get real change.
Right. And I know that you mentioned Tom Shoes before.
Yes.
You know, there are a lot of young people who are, you know, that's the way they're looking at business, right? They're looking, they're starting with a mission in mind, you mm-hmm. know, the new generation of social entrepreneurs, and, you know, they're solving problems and making money.
Yeah.
So it's actually, it's quite hopeful. It actually is quite hopeful. So I guess we're winding down. So is there, you know, you can use this time to just talk about, you know, the fact that you do see hope and yes. that, you know, things will get better. So, you know, all these employees that feel like, oh, I have to check my values at the door. I just have to go in and make widgets. You know, it would be nice to offer them a word of encouragement.
Oh, yes. Well, I think this is going to sound like a backwards encouragement. so forgive me. I am also a certified coach.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things in coaching that you do and that you learn in your process is that it's through tension that change occurs, right?
Right.
And so right now, I believe that we are feeling the tension in the atmosphere, right? It's
yes.
palpable. You
yes.
can feel it. You could cut it with a knife.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
And so it's right there. So we are, the encouragement is the fact that it's painful, it's tense, it's there, but it's so there that the change is on the horizon. I mean, we cannot get much more attention without a change.
Hmm.
And so the change is right there. And I think the biggest words of encouragement, especially to my millennials, is you are the change. You are it. You have to bring this into the workplace because you are the ones that are taking over the leadership. And you are the ones who are best suited for it. You have that mindset and that knowledge, and it's your turn to teach. And it's your turn to really affect what's happening in the world. And to me, that's great encouragement. I feel like Cheryl, I would like to turn back time, be a millennial, and be challenged with that ability. But yes, changes are happening. We see that. We see that with major companies. We see that with entrepreneurship. One of our founding members is the owner of Sunlight Capital. They're an investment firm. They only invest in conscious capitalism companies. With the founder of the Arizona chapter, again, he's also an investment company, only investing in conscious capitalism companies. And so we're seeing a movement not only among the companies themselves, but among investors and among funders that really are realizing that I'm not going to get a return tomorrow, but if I invest properly with the right company, with the right purposes, then I will have a return and everybody will benefit.
Well, it is just good to know that when we talk about capitalism, we can talk about it in a more conscious way. Yes. And not have it used as a curse word, as some are apt to do.
Yes.
But, you know, look, we've made great strides. I think there's more strides to be made, and onward and upward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you so much. If there's any information that you or your listeners need in the future, please do not hesitate to call on us, and please come see us.
Again, that is Conscious Capitalism Houston. You can go on Facebook and find them, Conscious Capitalism Houston. Just do a search. And for any other information, you can go to consciouscapitalism.org. And I think you can find the Houston chapter. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking out the time to talk and have this really, really interesting conversation about conscious capitalism. We will be paying close attention to see what's happening with the Houston chapter, and what other conversations and what other events that come along. And we'll be talking to you, I'm sure, in the future.
Well, and Roz, before we go, I want to take a moment on behalf of our entire organization to thank you for your interest in what we're doing and for you taking the time to have this interview and to talk with us about what conscious capitalism is and what it means to our city, and your support. Without people like you, we couldn't get the word out. And so we're humbled and very much appreciate what you're doing in helping us to get this out. So thank you.
So join us again for our next episode of Circular Stories.
Circular Stories is produced by me, Rosalind Wyatt, and you can contact me at phone number 832-463-0587. You can email me at info@circularstories.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @CircularRoz.